we're able to take care of the full spectrum of people with HIV. That includes women, infants, children, youth.
Hi, and welcome to the NCCHCA podcast. I'm your host, Alvin Capitaco. In this edition of our series on HIV awareness, prevention, and treatment, my co-host, Leslie Walcott, and I interview a guest from Western North Carolina Community Health Services.
My name is Scott Parker, and I am our director of Ryan White Services here at our health center in Asheville, North Carolina. I've just passed my 11-year anniversary here. I feel like I have a pretty good feel for what's going on in this part of the world.
Can you tell me a little bit about Western North Carolina Community Health Services and basically just the services that you provide?
Yeah, so we're a federally qualified health center. We're part of the North Carolina Community Health Center Association. And we are located in the western part of the state in Asheville, North Carolina. Asheville is a growing town of about 75,000, 80,000 people. But a lot of the counties in this part of the state are very rural. So there are a lot of issues like transportation, a lot of different issues around rural poverty. So we provide highly integrated behavioral health care services, medical services, dental services. We have a robust HIV program here, thanks to our Ryan White funding. And we have a strong transgender health program here with about 400 people from all across Western North Carolina receiving transgender health primary care services here. We employ about 200 people and provide services to about 15,000.
15,000, is that every month or is that weekly?
That would be unduplicated annual amount.
Could you just elaborate on those services that you provide?
We feel very fortunate that as an FQHC, a community health center, we're able to provide HIV services to many of the same people who would qualify for our services in the general population because of their income and lack of insurance. So we feel like having a Ryan White program in a setting of a community health center really makes it a strong, vibrant program because of what foundationally community health centers offer. And community health centers offer things like integrated behavioral health, transportation, dental, medical, enabling services. So when you take a Ryan White program and you put it in that environment, it can't help but do well. We get multiple funding streams specifically for the Ryan White program. We get two federally funded grants every year. We also receive some pass-through funding from the feds through the state of North Carolina. So we're able to take care of the full spectrum of people with HIV. That includes women, infants, children, youth. We're able to provide pharmacy services, medical care, dental care, behavioral health, transportation. We have been providing during COVID food boxes, emergency financial assistance, and we're now doing a lot of telehealth because of COVID for our HIV positive clients. We're doing testing. We're now vaccinating. So we provide services to about 800 people living with HIV who are lower income and or uninsured in the 18 westernmost counties of North Carolina.
Can you just tell us a little bit about why you think HIV is high in the southern state of the United States? Because we know that, at least from the research, that the southern states are quite affected by HIV.
So it is. You are right. It's very prevalent in a lot of the southern states, and I think it's a number of factors there. I think one is higher rates of poverty because many of the states in the South did not expand Medicaid. There are issues with sometimes access to health care. You know, as good as the Ryan White program is, and as much as it does not pay for hospitalization or emergency department visits. So it's limited And when these states in the South don't expand Medicaid, it really impacts the population in a negative way. And thank God for community health centers who were there to try to pick up the pieces. But the other component in the South, I think, is stigma. There is a lot of stigma. There's a lot of racial bias. And the fact that a lot of the South is very rural, it makes it harder to access services, transportation, things like that. So I think in the South, it's a lack of healthcare, high degree of uninsured people, stigma, and barriers to care like transportation. I think they all play a big part of that.
And have there been improvements over the years? Also the issue of stigma and tolerance or acceptance of the LGBTI community as well and their rights to these services?
I think the Deep South is just starting to experience some of those improvements. And the main reason is because finally funders at the federal, state, local, and foundation have began to look at the South as the epicenter of HIV. So they're starting to provide funding in a way that is specific to Southerners and to Southerners with HIV. So we're at the very beginning, I think, of some good things that are going to happen because of that increased funding and because they've really put the South under a microscope.
Is there enough awareness on the use of PrEP, and are we doing much to sort of promote it here in the U.S.?
So I think in different parts of this country, PrEP is working because it's available, it's affordable, and it's promoted. But again, when you look at areas like the Deep South, it begins to really drop off the prescribing of PrEP. And there are a number of reasons for that. One, it goes back to a lot of the other reasons we talked about: lack of insurance, stigma, barriers to care. We don't have enough medical providers who know how to prescribe PrEP or want to prescribe PrEP. So it's hard sometimes finding the medical providers who are able to write the prescriptions and do the exam and have, you know, a sex positive clinical environment where a patient coming in to ask about PrEP is not a victim of stigma or shame, that it's something that they can walk into a clinic and openly discuss with a medical provider about their sexual health. And that's another great thing about community health centers. They're often settings for those types of things. So, I would certainly encourage people who are out there looking for PrEP is check with their local community health center to see if PrEP is offered.
I asked Scott to tell us whether he thought that the LGBTI community is discriminated against when seeking access to HIV services or information at health facilities.
Yeah, that's a really good question. And I think, if you have an environment in your clinical or medical setting that is welcoming to people in regards to sexual health, if you hire people, staff to work at your health center who are knowledgeable about sexual health and comfortable talking about sexual health. If a patient walks into a new clinic and nobody wants to talk about the thing they want to talk about, they're not going to ask the questions because they're going to feel stigmatized. So that's going to be a failure of our system. So when you have posters in your waiting room that says, you know, we're good with sexual health here, it sets the tone for people when they come in that this is a safe place and that you're willing to talk about a person's sexual health because it's such an important part of who they are.
Do you think that there's enough programs and services that gives out information or provides information on HIV and AIDS?
I would never say there's enough. Everybody can always do better. We can do better. Agencies can do better. Local, state governments, federal governments can do better. But it seems like we're moving towards a place where people are a lot more comfortable talking about that and promoting it and trying to get providers trained to go out into their communities and provide those kinds of services.
Why do you think we continue to see an increase or rather new infections, even with the interventions that we have currently?
So it seems like new infections in the United States have been pretty level over a number of years, but it's still high. It's still about 50,000 people a year come infected with HIV. And the number is not going up dramatically, but it's not falling. So something's wrong somewhere. And I think the things that we talked about earlier, increased access to PrEP, increased access to clinics that have a sexual health program so that people can come in and be educated about safer sex and not be stigmatized. I think those are some of the things we can continue doing.
So what do you think religious leaders are doing to address the issue of HIV and AIDS?
The faith-based community is so important, especially in the Deep South. They can be great advocates for some of the things we've been talking about, but at the same time, there can be a stigma around faith-based organizations and things like sexual health. But I think that bridge is always being built, and those communications are always being improved. But we always have to have the faith-based community at the table when we're having these conversations.
How has COVID-19 impacted on HIV programs?
COVID-19 has impacted services at our agency for sure. I think one thing, like a lot of health centers across the country, who are used to innovating and used to turning on a dime when they need to make the adjustments. We sort of went overnight from being a primary care clinic to a COVID screening clinic. There's not a health center in the state that didn't make that pivot. So we were testing, screening, socially distancing. So we really had to really realign a lot of the way we provide services here to be able to do that. So among our HIV positive patients, we really, it was sort of a blessing in disguise in that we were very happy with the number of people who utilized our telehealth services. We had over 200 of our patients utilize telehealth for their primary care visits during COVID in the last 12 months. And I was also very surprised to see that among our people living with HIV, we had a couple of hundred people also access mental health services during COVID-19. So the takeaway from that is COVID brought a lot of bad things, but it brought some good things. And it taught us that a lot of folks who live in outlying areas can be served with telehealth, and you can keep them engaged in care, whether it's behavioral health or primary medical care, and they can stay in care with use of COVID. I had a physician call from Swain County in the western part of the state, which is pretty rural today, and he works at a free clinic. He had an HIV-positive patient coming in next week, and he didn't know what to do with him, but the patient was homeless. He didn't know really how to treat him. He didn't think he could get to us for care. So I talked to our medical director, and we set up a telehealth appointment. So he's going to go to the free clinic. They're going to call in here, and they're going to co-manage this patient using telehealth. So there's a thing where before COVID, we wouldn't have been able to do that, and we may not have even thought of it. But with COVID now, we're looking at ways going beyond COVID to be able to provide those services.
I'm interested to know on whether HIV medication is free to HIV positive people, like at the health centers?
Fortunately, the state of North Carolina and most states have a program for low income and or uninsured patients to be able to access medication. So we also always budget in our Ryan White funding if anybody can't afford the medication. Nobody goes away without medication. We had a $250,000 grant from the state of North Carolina to pilot a rapid start program. So now our patients who are newly diagnosed or re-engaged in care are able to take their first pill the day they're here for their first appointment, and they leave with a 30-day supply.
Are there regional differences even within the state of North Carolina, do you think, in treating people living with HIV?
I think every geographic area in North Carolina has their barriers. Sometimes we think, we're so rural, our folks are so spread out, it's hard for them to get here. But you can take a more urban setting like Charlotte or Raleigh, and they have a different kinds of barriers. So I think what's good about North Carolina, and especially what's good about having these in community health center settings, is part of a community health center is working out, looking at barriers to care, addressing them, and making the services more available for everyone. So again, it's that combination of a Ryan White program and a health community health center setting. Community health centers were made to address those barriers, so it's a natural fit for a Ryan White program. So we feel blessed that we have both of those in one setting. The Ryan White program was started, I wish I knew the exact date, but you can look it up. Of course, it was named after Ryan White, who was a teenager who was infected with HIV after a blood transfusion and became sort of a national star, national villain for some people. They tried to kick him out of his public school. There were people protesting. They didn't want their children around him. So what happened is Congress then came up with the Ryan White HIV AIDS program, which distributes money to states and territories in the United States. Some of the funding goes to make sure people get their medications. Others go to make sure they get their medical care, behavioral health, dental care. And some go specifically for women, infants, children, and youth. And the others go to early intervention services so that when people are diagnosed, there's a seamless entry and quick entry into HIV medical care. So that program has been funded year after year after year. And we're very fortunate to be able to bring in those dollars to this part of our state, because without agencies like health centers bring in those federal funds to their community, and it makes their community a better place, and they have better health outcomes. So, the Ryan White program is vital for what we do.
And I'm sure you'll see no political agenda in my question at all when I say, do you use the 340B program at Winches? And if so, can you talk a little bit about that?
Yeah, we certainly do use the 340B program here at Winches. It's probably one of the most important ways that we're able to bring in income so that we can take that program income and provide more services to people. And whenever in a community health center setting, particularly when somebody starts talking about lessening those funds or taking away those funds or messing with those funds, they're talking about impacting the health of your community in a negative way. There's no way around it. It's what keeps health centers going. It's what keeps patients in care. It's what allows us to provide our services to people. Without that funding, or if they start tinkering with that funding, it's not just the health center, it's your community that they're impacting.
And that was Scott Parker, who spoke to us about HIV awareness, prevention, and treatment from Western North Carolina Community Health Services in Asheville.